Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the podcast that is, for all intents and purposes, dead, but is still mathematically alive for at least a couple more weeks. I am Paul.
I'm Frank.
I'm Scott.
And we'll talk a little bit about the phase we're in of Buffalo Bills seasons. I do want to commend the team for again, the consistency and mediocrity that we have really seen this season. They went 2-2 in the first four games, 2-2 in the next four games, and then 2-2 in this last set of games. And this included a game where I think we all went into this game thinking, well, you know, the odds of winning are minimal, but we all agreed last week the Bills could pull this out. Frank, in fact, picked the Bulls, who had as good a chance of winning.
Bulls had a chance.
Yeah, they did. The Bills had a good chance of winning this game. And then all of a sudden, about nine minutes left in the third quarter, it became, well, the Bills really need to win this game now because they have this team on the ropes. It's on the road. It's West Coast. It would be a signature win, a win over a 9-2 team on the road. They're up 24-9. Their odds of winning were 96.3% or something along those lines, or maybe 94.3%. No, maybe 96, I think. And then all of a sudden, it just rapidly fell down. You know, we won't recap the game play-by-play or anything, but, you know, we all saw what Derek Carr did, the sense of urgency that the Raiders had to get within a score. And then they made the interesting decision when they scored again to just kick the extra point because they were that confident they were going to score it. They didn't need the two-point conversion to tie and just really made an embarrassment of the Bills the last 24 minutes of that game. So, you know, starting off with, initial thoughts on this game, I think we'll start with you, Frank. You know, when you were watching this game, what was your, you know, range of reaction and emotion to what we were seeing?
It was remarkable. Right at the 30, I mean, I texted you that, you know, that they had played an excellent first 36 minutes of football. Like, I texted that kind of well after they were losing. But at that moment, I really had the urge to get a hold of you two and ask, and I'll be interested to basically say, like, has there been a better game? Like, has there been a bigger accomplishment than this, what this game looks like, up 14 on the road against the Raiders in the deep playoff spot? And I wasn't sure that we had seen anything like it before in the last 16 years in the drought era. And I think that's still a valid question, if only flipped. I've seen them choke away some terrible games. I think this ranks with any loss as far as unbelievable, as far as gut punch, as far as anything, as far as stink from afar. So we went from what could have been, you know, what seemed like one of the best games they put together in 16 years to maybe historic kind of loss. I don't know about historic, but I think noteworthy loss, even in even in a bag of trash, you know, it's a pretty gross feeling. I felt like if you told me that they would have 200 yards rushing, that I would have felt very good about the Bills' chances. I still really can't tell you what happened. It happened so fast. The 29 points. I mean, it just happened very fast. The fact that the Raiders could score made sense because I felt like they were a good team and I thought that you were going to keep them down. I have no idea what happened to the offense. They just went, like, it was like they would make one bad first down decision and then couldn't, like, climb out of it all of a sudden, and it was over before they had the chance. And, like, all the good stuff they had done in the first half was just gone out of nowhere. I don't know what to make of it because I still it just doesn't make sense other than in the bigger picture of this team, right? Like, it's a very Billsy way to lose. It's a very Billsy thing to do. And I don't know. The last thing I'll say about it for now, before we let Scott talk, is I'm not as mad that they lost this game. It really made me mad that they lost the first two games of the season. Like, this was the game where I looked back over the season and said, God damn it, if we had won the Ravens game or the Jets game, or really the Dolphins game,
Dolphins, Seahawks game. Let's see.
Right. Like, this game is like, okay, like, if they had taken care of business earlier, you would have looked at this game and said, well, you know what? Like, the Raiders might win the Super Bowl this year, and I don't think the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl, but, like, that's almost expected. And it's okay because we have these other earlier wins in the pocket. And so this game hurts, but it hurts – the hurt compounded for me because of how they had failed early in the season to capitalize when they needed to.
Yeah, what do you think, Scott?
For me, it's less, I don't know if Frank says it's hard to believe per se, or more if it's more just kind of like he's just annoyed that it happened. It's definitely easy to believe because I saw it happen twice this weekend as I watched my beloved Wisconsin Badgers blow a 21-point lead in the mat in a court. I mean, they did it over a halftime. Like, we were up 28-7 with about 3 or 4 minutes left in the first half. We let them run in like a 60-yard touchdown pass. And it's like, oh, well, that's kind of a bummer, but we're still up 2 scores. And then as me and Sam are kind of just relaxing and catching up and, you know, Penn State kind of hanging around, Penn State kind of scoring here and there, you know, by the end of the fourth quarter, it was a much closer game. And then they go ahead. And then I'm just kind of, and then suddenly we need to score to tie them. And I'm like, well, how did this happen? And sure enough, we can't get it done. So those things definitely do happen.
And they too lost a playoff spot, I believe, by blowing that game.
Very, very potentially did lose a playoff spot. I mean, ultimately Penn State didn't make it in either, but regardless, it wasn't, certainly wasn't going to happen. And now we're going to the lovely, I mean, normally the Cotton Bowl is a great bowl to go to unless you're playing Western Michigan after just losing the Big Ten championship. In which case that might explain why they're selling tickets for $6 in Texas Stadium. I just needed a little rant there. So I don't think it's that surprising for me. I don't want to, I mean, I watched a large portion of the game. I did not see the full Oakland comeback because we just needed to get this podcast underway and I was watching it right before we started.
Exactly.
So I will say though that I did watch the first half, and obviously looking at the game in kind of hindsight being 20/20 and knowing, because I was listening on the radio as it was going on, you know, I could kind of see, you could start to see some of the signs, you know, looking at it with having known what happens, you know, you could see, you know, the Raiders dropping touchdown passes in the end zone in the first half and settling for field goals. I noticed that when the Raiders suddenly started scoring more in the second half, they had pretty much, like, in the first half, they were definitely trying to throw off the Bills' defensive timing through hard counts, through you know, missing with the motion, through trying to establish the run game for them. But it was very clear that once they kind of decided, like, this isn't working anymore in the second half, they just started throwing the ball all around the field. And it's like, oh, well, they should have been doing this the whole time because our secondary is terrible and they haven't proven anything the whole season. So, it's kind of crazy that they waited that long on some level. So I'm going to say that's bad coaching by them to not come up with a good game plan, but better coaching for them that they adjusted it accordingly, and accordingly bad coaching from the Bills, which we've seen on a number of occasions this year, to, you know, at least on offense, they made some adjustments in halftime to do a little better in the red zone. And obviously the big LeSean play helped out.
Yeah.
But on the same point, you know, clearly on the defensive side, absolutely no adjustments were made other than to play worse, which I don't think was a coaching decision, but if it was, you got to be scratching your head about that one.
Right. It seems questionable. They're like, you know, we want to make this a game, so let's play worse. That's a conscious decision. I might have issues with that.
Yeah, exactly. That would seem to be something that the Googlers would want to look into. And in terms of how it happened, I will tell you how it happened very quickly. Direct snap to LeSean McCoy. Direct snap to Mike Ilesley. Tyrod Taylor pass incomplete. LeSean McCoy left tackle. Tyrod Taylor pass incomplete. McCoy left guard, pass incomplete. That's basically how we lost the game in the space of like nine plays.
You know, the direct snaps really bugged me now that you made, I hated both of those. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I think it's a good point. I mean, I think, you know, there's a certain rhythm on offense and you kind of just have to know what it is. It's clear that they disrupted that a little bit. I don't know how much of it also was Tyrod. Maybe, I don't know how many of the first kind of, you know, they say that you can have, you know, designed packages for the first 10 or 15 plays. I don't know to what extent we do that. I don't think we've done it a lot this year. I haven't heard that we've done it a lot, but it did seem that he was a bit more indecisive. But I will say he's a bit more indecisive in the second half. But again, looking at it kind of with hindsight, you do kind of notice that Tyrod is having a little trouble going through the reads. I mean, there were a number of times he was sacked in the first half because he literally just couldn't make a decision, basically.
Yeah.
And obviously the one in the red zone where we had to settle for the field goal, the first score, you know, that would have been a big opportunity to get ahead. So I don't want to say I was totally surprised by this. I definitely was. I don't want to say, I mean, it's definitely, I was, if you ask me where we were at 24-9, would I rather be us or them? Yeah, I would rather be us. But at that point, I don't know what the win percentage was. I think it was about
96.3.
That I don't think any Bills fan worth his salt should not have thought there was
a nope. Yeah, I was thinking closer to 50-50. Legitimately, it was 50-50 in my head at that point. Whereas, ironically, yeah. And I'm just not to interject, but this is what occurred to me too.
Done.
Okay, cool. And then it piggybacks off Scott's point here, which is when the Bills, you know, when it got to be 24-23, I felt like, okay, their odds of winning now are much less. And the second the Raiders took the lead, I thought, well, that's probably it. They were up by 7, mind you, or no, 6, mind you. So it's not like they were up huge. But when they took the lead, I'm like, well, that's going to be it. The Bills are down in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Probably not coming back from this. That's that. And then the second they scored again, even though there's legitimately a chance to score 14 points in the fourth quarter, of course, I had given up. I'm like, there's no way, because the Bills are going to mount, at the very best, a time-consuming scoring drive. They got half of that right. They got the time-consuming part down. Going, knocking it down to about 3-plus minutes left on the clock. And then, of course, Tyrod fumbled, and that was that. So it was just it's so frustrating to watch this game play out and to know exactly where it was headed, that they just – once they started to, you know, lose momentum, and then once they fell behind, like, it was over. You know, no Bills fan worth their salt believed it was a win. And I'd be neglectful to mention – that the final scores we all picked for last week's game, Scott picked 37-24 Raiders, which if they didn't kick that, you know, if they didn't try that pointless two and just let Janikowski kick the extra point on that last score, you would have been exactly right. So kudos.
Well, they did it on purpose. I mean, you know, it was like the final stick in the eye was to just, you know,
now. And we're going to wreck Scott's perfect pick.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They knew it, and they wanted to give everyone hope in Buffalo, and then they wanted to ruin that, and then they wanted to kill your pick.
Yep. And they accomplished all the above. To bring a positive memory back to associate this with all the negativity that we're going to naturally go through, we all remember the 38-3 comeback versus the Oilers. When I have rewatched that game, I was always struck, and the announcers would be pointing this out, like every time that Frank Reich seemed to find Andre Reed, it was because the person in the secondary responsible for covering Reed, whatever zone of the field he was in, was looking back at the quarterback the whole time and not really paying that much attention to where the receiver was going. And they'd always get caught with their eyes in the backfield, and Reed would run by them and catch a touchdown. I feel like that happened to Corey White. It happened to James. I don't want to butcher his last name, so I'm just not going to say it. Numerous times, just struck by how many times the Bills were caught looking, so to speak, in the secondary. And it was just really disturbing to see that they just kept doing that over and over against a quarterback who is, and credit where credit is due, Derek freaking Carr. Lord, I knew he was decent from a couple years ago. I've seen his development a little bit in about five Raiders games I've watched in the last 2 years, not many. Wow, what a great quarterback. And, you know, you wish the Bills could luck into that sort of mid-round pick that the Raiders did there. So, the frustrating part, of course, is not that the Bills lost to a superior team on the road. We expected that, but that they had the game in hand. They had opportunities to just keep doing what they'd done for the first three quarters, as I pointed out on Twitter, and they were unable to do it. And that just ends up leading to a very frustrating afternoon. So to put this game in our rear view, of course, we will kick it over to Scott, who will talk to us about the three stars of this fabulous two-thirds of a football game.
So, yeah, and this was this I determined that as the Star Master or the Star Lord, if you will, I believe that's my copyright, correct?
Yeah, I can't think of any other exactly. I mean, I would guard that. I would guard that name carefully throughout the entire galaxy. But yes.
Yes, no, I'll be sure to do that. You know, I think people are going to be marveling about this kind of.
Absolutely. It's super.
Going forward.
It's super, and you're a hero.
But as Star-Lord that I am,
From now on, that's it. You are Star-Lord.
Absolutely. I get to determine the number of stars and the placement thereof. And so there will be 6 stars for this game. There will be 3 stars for the first 35 minutes, and there will be 3 stars for the last 25. So on we go with your third star. And I'm giving it to Mike Gillisley, who I love right now. I mean, I love LeSean McCoy too. Obviously, he's going to be on the list as well. But Mike Gillisley, like how we had him on the team for. He was most of last season, and we didn't use him as the short yardage guy. Like, he's unbeatable on short yardage. I don't think I've seen him got stopped once. Have you guys?
No. He really
he attacks it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful compliment to LeSean McCoy's style. In the way that Reggie Bush is exactly not.
Exactly.
Like, he literally just goes like, there's the hole. I'm going. Bye, guys.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to run as hard as I can directly into this hole. Like, that's all he's trying to do. And if someone tackles him, they're going to have to tackle him. And if there's no one there, he's going to keep running. It's pretty simple. Yep. Like, again, exact opposite of LeSean. Great change of pace. I love watching him. So he's definitely a third star. He ended up on the day with 8 for 49 and 2 touchdowns, which is a nice day at the office, you know, especially for really only 35 minutes of work. I give LeSean the second star for 17 carries for 130 yards, again, overall on the game, as well as 7 catches for 61 yards. Again, almost 200 yards from scrimmage. You really can't complain about anything LeSean's doing right now. Obviously, it would have been nice to maybe have him show up a little bit more on those 3 series that basically, you know, kind of did not do the defense any favors. Mm-hmm. But certainly not a big... not a big surprise there. And then just a honorable mention, Corey Graham. I thought he had a nice first half. You know, I thought we did a good job of kind of keeping the Raiders in front of us for the first half, but we'll, whatever. And then your first star, you know, Mr. Tyrod Taylor, again, for that first 35 minutes, what did they say? It was like 9 of 11 for 100 something yards and a running touchdown. You know, ended up obviously not that great. You know, 3 carries for 30 yards and that touchdown. And then obviously after that, the, you know, kind of 9 for 21 or whatever it ended up being, where he just kind of fell off the map in the second half. But we don't need to talk about that anymore because we're now on to the second part of 3 stars. So the real 3 stars. So
the 3 stars that matter, if you will, and that they actually resulted in what happened at the end of the game. Yeah.
The team winning at the end of the game. Yeah. So I had Crabtree in here, and it was kind of a tough call because I liked Latavius Murray. He obviously had a lot of good runs. Some of those were in the first half, though. So sticking more with your second half theme, Crabtree was the one who had a little more impact there. And again, why the Raiders felt like the second half, waiting till the second half to really just attack the Bills defense, I don't know, and they're probably kicking themselves for making this as much of a game as it was because of it. But, you know, and again, Crabtree's a fine receiver. He's certainly not like a world beater. And if he was going up against last year's Stephon Gilmore and Ronald Darby, I'd be pretty pleased with that matchup. But clearly that's not who we're starting right now. I will say second star, the guy the Bills fans wish we had maybe drafted 2 or 3 years ago, some Bills fans perhaps, Khalil Mack, who, again, you know, a quiet first half. You know, they spent him a lot of time rushing him up the middle, I noticed, in the first half. But on the second half, they just kind of turned him loose at end, and he just really just kind of ended up eating up Jordan Mills. Jordan Mills definitely... I don't know what they're going to show him in the film study this week, because if he had to watch what happened to him on Sunday, I'm pretty sure he would never, but he would quit the game. It would not be pretty, because he was bull rushed by a guy who, again, Khalil Mack's like a big, strong guy, and he's obviously very athletic, but he just got bull rushed by him. Like, it wasn't even that hard. Like, he just pushed him into Taylor on a couple of occasions. He ended up with 7 tackles and a sack and a pass deflection, another tackle for loss. He was all over the field. He's a good player. And then first star, Derek Carr, 19 of 35 for 260 and two touchdowns. But again, really in the second half, kind of came alive. I don't think there was any Raiders fan who was, I mean, I'm sure there probably were Raiders fans who were a little bit doubting this team, but I don't think any of the smart Raiders fans, presuming that there are, were like, Derek Carr can't bring us back in this game.
No. Yeah, there was nobody that did. There's no Raiders fan that thought that, even the dumb ones. I mean, they've been doing that all year.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not surprising that he brought him back again. But nonetheless, that doesn't change the fact that he was probably the single most important person for the Raiders in this game, in the second half, in the microwave, whatever. Pretty much in any venue, Derek Carr was a really important player. So, yeah, and those are your six special stars.
Yes, Derek Carr is certainly no stranger to, you know, heating up the hot pocket that he has to escape from.
They didn't get near him the entire, like, they just, it was the wall.
It was a cold pocket.
Yeah, the Raiders built a wall and the Bills paid for it is what happened. They absolutely dominated the front seven in that regard, and it was a little pathetic.
Yeah, this was just a
great.
Yeah. So, all right. So, moving on to God, we could do so. I'm debating what order to do the agenda, and I think we're just gonna kind of naturally go into the we'll go into the playoff talk. Why not? It's the next thing, and we can talk about the playoffs now. You know, we don't talk about it in advance because we feel it's like a jinx and so forth. We can talk about it now because we are in what's called the theoretical phase, where it's not actually going to happen. So we can freely talk about knowing we're not jinxing something that is not reality. So this is, you know, phase one is, you know, the Bills are, you know, alive and in the hunt, and they just need to do a couple things here and there, and they're in. And then phase two is, well, they're mathematically alive, but they really need to win out and need some help in other areas. And then phase three, which we'll be entering shortly, is they're mathematically out. So we're in phase two at this point, the mathematically alive phase. So hopefully, what we expect to happen, of course, is that the Bills are going to win the AFC East. Have you guys looked up the set of things that need to happen for the Bills to win the AFC East?
No, I would love to hear that.
Sure. This is all that the Bills need to happen. So they just have to win out, plain and simple.
Sure.
They need the Patriots to lose out. They need the Houston Texans at 6-6 to lose out. They need the Jacksonville Jaguars at 2-10. To win out, they need to make sure that the Raiders. Yes.
Yeah, that's got to be all strength of schedule stuff that happens, right?
Right. Yes. They need the Dolphins to not really, you know, get in the way. They need the Dolphins to they need to beat the Dolphins and have the Dolphins lose somewhere else along the way. And then lastly, they just need the Raiders to stay ahead of the Broncos, because by doing that, the Bills will have a better strength of schedule, which is the sixth tiebreaker that this would then boil down to, because they would have faced a stronger opponent in the Raiders than the Patriots did in the Broncos. So that's what we're fully expecting to happen, of course, and the Bills will take the AFC title. That only involves like 24 separate things happening, more or less. So nice and easy. Right. The reality is the odds of getting to the playoffs are somewhere around 13% right now, give or take. You know, some have it as low as 6%. It's low, which means it's not going to happen at this point. So it is a frustrating spot to be in as Bills fans. It is, you know, we reference the games that, you know, Frank was talking about earlier. And, you know, the games at the beginning of the year to Baltimore and the Jets, both winnable games that they didn't do much with. The big leads against the Dolphins and the Raiders, the opportunities against the Seahawks. And as we noted last week, in the six games they've actually won, there haven't been really too many doubts during those games that they were going to win them. The Jaguars was the closest, but by the time the fourth quarter got rolling through, it was pretty well decided that the Bills were going to win that game. And so here are all those lost opportunities when, you know, they had chances to close teams out. They did not. And so instead of being 7-5 with tiebreakers over the Dolphins, or being 8-3 with tiebreakers, or excuse me, 8-4 with tiebreakers over the Broncos, and just being a good spot and only needing to win, you know, really two of the last four games, then they've got to win out and hope for help. And, you know, that's really, you know, all I had to really note on the playoffs. Star Commander, was that it? Is it Star something?
Yes.
Star Lord. What are your, you know, if you thought much about the playoffs other than why do we have to talk about this?
I mean, I'm looking forward to them. I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see. I mean, I think Oakland's a pretty good matchup for the Patriots. I mean, obviously, you want to see Oakland get that home field advantage, though, because if they got to have to go to New England, then we got to do a snow game again, and then obviously something crazy is going to happen. That doesn't sound good.
It could all end where it started, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it'll be a reverse kind of thing where the Patriots go to Oakland. And instead of it being snowed out, there's
a drought.
I was gonna make a terrible, terrible joke. Okay, but I'm not.
Yeah,
that would be kind of mean.
I kind of guess where you're going, and yeah, that's probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh God, no. Yeah, yeah. Good stop.
Yeah,
I couldn't figure out where you're going with it. Then I realized,
you get credit for not actually saying it, so yeah. You're okay.
For once, I will stop before I make the terrible joke. Anyway, but yeah, exactly. Like there's some sort of drought or earthquake that happens, and then Tom Brady has the ball fall out of his hand. The Raiders pick it back and run it back for a touchdown, and then that's how they lose. And Brady says, well, it was an earthquake. I can't be blamed for that. And it's like, no, the deal with the devil runs out. It's been 16 years. Sorry. So then that must be it. So hopefully that'll happen. But, yeah, so I think I'm looking forward to the playoffs. Oh, you mean the Bills playoffs? Oh, yeah. No, I don't really think about that anymore. I mean, yeah. I was only barely thinking about it going into the Raiders game, frankly. I mean, it was... Already it was, as you pointed out, we're in phase two now. So really, it's just kind of like you're only hurting yourself if you think about the playoffs still. And that was last week. So now it's just kind of like, yeah.
Yep. No,
that's
agree.
Me.
Yeah, Frank, any thoughts on the Bills and the playoffs?
No, I am happy. I'll say I want them to win out. Like, I want them to play Pittsburgh and beat them, and I want them to win the last three games. I'm not in any sort of tank mode or let's see what Cardale Jones has kind of mode myself. I think that losing to the Raiders, this is still exactly who I thought the team was. Like, you know, and I said at the outset, like, for me, the fault really lies with them losing the first couple of games that they could have won. Jets, Miami, Baltimore, like somewhere in there. And so I'd like to see that there's still a team that can kind of, you know, maybe, you know, do something good. And if they get 9-10 wins, that's not inconsequential to me. So, and if they, you know, that 6% happens, then awesome. But, you know, I kind of put playoffs in my mind. I just want this team to play well now.
So play well is the goal for Frank. I would, and this segues into our next topic, because Frank notes, 9-10 wins for him wouldn't be inconsequential. The interesting thing for me is I feel like 9-10 wins would be inconsequential if, you know, they, well, 10 wins, maybe not so. But where this leads me is, you know, we talked about him ad nauseum last week. Two things we want to talk about here, Tyrod again, and then the defense, and both of them facing steep expectations this year. Tyrod for, hey, this is your first year of a big deal that you will go into effect once we can't even think of the terminology. Essentially, once a clause in his contract is exercised, he will get a large, large sum of money at the end of the year. And the defense, everyone was saying this is the second year in the Rex system, so they should be great. My concern is, as we enter the final quarter of the season, they neither has developed as we've hoped. Tyrod still has really his two fourth quarter, quote-unquote, comebacks are Tennessee last year and Jacksonville this year, two terrible teams. And when they've been positioned to win, he still hasn't led them to the win, which is what Doug Whaley identified at the beginning of the year as something he needed to do. The defense, Rex said, oh, you're in the system, they're going to be great. But takeaways have dried up. They've barely gotten any in weeks. The sacks have been there a little bit more, but not phenomenally so. Yes, they're near the top of the league, but they seem to have vanished as well. So starting with, you know, Tyrod, and I'll just start briefly on this. My concern with Tyrod Taylor is he's had these, and I was a big fan of his last week. Even if he plays well and the team wins out and goes 10-6, if they don't make the playoffs, I feel it is still kind of a spoiled finish because he's had opportunities to do well in the games that matter toward the playoffs, the games that have a high level of meaning, and did not come through in those situations. So I am a little bit soured on Tyrod right now, and really, unless they do go 10-6 and somehow make the playoffs when the other stuff happens, I'm not comfortable with exercising a Tannehill-esque extension that pays someone to be okay at their job and locks up your salary cap. Frank, starting with you, what do you think of what happens in these last four games, what it means for Tyrod?
I think unless he bottoms out, I 100% want to sign this extension. Right. And it's not because I disagree with you, really. I think that I look at it this way. The market for quarterbacks is terrible. No one is going to come out and be available if you cut that payroll.
Romo.
No, his money is going to be eaten up completely. The Cowboys are going to have to pay for him no matter what. So I think they're just going to keep him. I think he's going to be the backup in football. He's got like $18 million in dead money. That's a fair question. I think like the best guy that might become available is someone like Kirk Cousins, who is probably better than Tyrod, but not noticeably more so. I've actually given this quite a bit of thought today. I think that the way you would cut Tyrod is if you thought you could get comparable play for less money. So if you think like Colin Kaepernick is about the same as Tyrod Taylor, then yeah, cut him and sign Colin Kaepernick, because the only place you're going to get a good quarterback is the draft, and the only place you're going to get going to be able to draft one of these quarterbacks is in the second, third, fourth round, really, because you're kind of late in the first round. And so my mind is made up that like if the money is spent on Tyrod, then it doesn't bother me, because the potential next good quarterback is only coming from a place that I know is going to be cheap, is going to be eminently affordable. It's the Dak Prescott route. And I think that the reason why I want to keep Taylor is because if you throw out his contract and you get rid of him, and I don't know, you sign someone who's much worse, or you throw a rookie into the fire, you're really risking not just that, you're kind of putting at risk the last remaining years of LeSean McCoy, of Marcell Dareus' time here, of Kyle Williams' time here, of Sammy Watkins' time here. And so if you play, it's not just a matter of get rid of him and throw in another guy. It's a matter of you're kind of giving up on the team if you give up on him. And what I know with Taylor is I kind of know what I can get, and I know I can get in this 8-8, 9-9, and 7 range with him, it seems. And then it's just a matter of a game or two breaking right for me, and I might still get in the playoffs. You've got to be drafting quarterbacks, though, while this is happening. I don't think he's the future. I just think that you're not going to do any better than him, probably. And so who cares where the money went? Because it's not like you can do much else with the team.
Okay.
All right, Star-Lord?
All right.
Sorry.
The Roomba's awake, so I was confused for a moment.
Roomba's anyway. And those were excellent counterpoints by Frank, by the way. So I tip my cap to you if I were wearing one.
It took me a while to come to it.
I think this is going to be huge the next couple weeks. Like, we're going to have like a weekly, like, this is going to be like the Lincoln and Douglas debates over the next couple weeks of the season in terms of like where everyone falls on the Tyrod issue. This is going to get, but I mean, keeping Tyrod, is the number that we signed him to, frankly, isn't that big of a number. Like, the number for the next 5 years is actually really not that big of a number compared to, like, you know, Russell Wilson money or Andrew Luck money. Or we're not paying him that. We're paying him, you know, not even, it's sort of Ryan Tannehill money, but it's not even really that, actually, if you kind of compare it to all NFL starting quarterback salaries. On the other side of that for me is something that we haven't really talked about is, where, like, I get Frank's point of, like, you don't want to give up on a season, and you don't want to, you know, 8-8 and 9-7, you know, with a chance to get a couple breaks and maybe get into the playoffs is, like, kind of nice. But I also feel like it's tough to go in and say, like, I'm not sure that this quarterback's going to get any better at any point soon, and he's not good enough now. And that, to me, bothers me. Because that's one of the things that the biggest question for me, I think, is Tyrod getting better? Can he get better? He has spent 4 or 5 years. This is not a rookie. This is a guy who spent 4 or 5 years supposed to be learning how to read a defense, how to expand the field, how to stay in the pocket, how to, you know, work progressions and all of that kind of stuff. And we're not seeing it. We're not seeing those kind of steps. He looks not like a rookie, but he looks like a guy who still doesn't have, he hasn't had all the lights come on, and he's already had 25 games. And so I don't know that I've seen better from game 2 or 3 last year to where he was on Sunday. I mean, he certainly has had a better game since, you know, he's had a great game. Obviously, he's had a couple great games, but a couple great games, you know, Ryan Leaf probably had a couple great games too. Like, that doesn't really do it for me. So I think that's one of the biggest questions for me is he going to get better? And if we think he's going to get better, then by all means, like, let's sign him and take the pill and kind of hope he gets better. And it's worth it with the money. It's, the risk is worth it that he won't. But if we think this is kind of his ceiling and he hasn't really progressed that much, then to me, that's where you have to start kind of looking around and being like, what are we doing here? Like, is this guy even a guy who, if the plan is, if everything go right, this guy can get you to the playoffs. Like, that's not good enough for me. Like, I need, if everything goes right, this guy can win you a Super Bowl. Like, that's what I need.
I think I agree with that. I just don't think that there's a way to replace that next year or the year after that.
It's not guaranteed that you will, but I don't think, you know, did the Cowboys think Dak Prescott was going to do that? Did, you know, the Raiders think Derek Carr was going to do that 2 years ago? Or?
Right, but I think you can look for those guys while you hold on to Tyrod Taylor and you're at least getting into that sort of kind of range.
I mean, you are on a certain level, but at the same time, you don't know what you have until you start them.
Yeah.
So you really don't. You're not really helping anyone. I mean, unless you have like Russell Wilson, where it's clear in the first 6 weeks of camp that he is better than Matt Flynn and you immediately decide to start him accordingly. You know, that doesn't happen all that often. So we're really just kind of kicking the can down the road in that case. I'm not sure how that fixes the problem.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think if you're not going to pursue other quarterbacks and you're not going to certainly start them or give them the opportunity to win the job, then yes, I agree with you. Like part of my understanding of why to sign him needs to be, we are also exploring other quarterbacks. It's just, I don't want to throw out everything, you know, I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Because, you know, I enjoy winning 8-9 games a year. I don't love it. I don't like it, but you know what? I really don't want to sit through some terrible season all to let it ride on somebody who could be Jameis Winston or Ryan Leaf. Or, you know, pick your first-round quarterback.
Yep. It's interesting. No, it's really a question of like...
Where's Scott? I want to throw out the baby. We're just
right.
Like,
you guys don't like any... Right. You hate the baby.
Well, it's just me. It's like, I'm more... And it's odd, obviously, given our respective political leanings. Like, you're more in favor of, like, security. And, like, I'd rather just enjoy the 8 games that we're going to win. Like, let's not... You know, the security of having that kind of thing. Whereas I'm much more about the hope. That I want to watch this and feel like I have hope for the future. And that's, it's just being secure isn't good enough for me. Which is,
I'm a fairly hawkish liberal though. I'm, you know, like,
okay. All right.
But,
and what's funny is I come from the third perspective of the businessman. And I'm like, this is tying way too much money in a quarterback.
Yeah.
Who is not your future. That money could be better spent on other players who can support McCoy. And then you keep drafting, you take the Washington approach of, hey, draft Griffith, draft Cousins, one of them is bound to work out. So that's my businessman approach. I just don't want to have all that money tied up in a guy who's not the future. So there, a third approach thrown into this equation.
Yeah, no, and I think that's what a lot of people would say. Like, I think the radio callers and people are going to say, like, well, why are you spending money on this? And I just sort of look at it like it's a sunk cost. And if you were to draft the next Dak Prescott or the next good quarterback, let's say, then or the next Russell Wilson, well, then you know what? You're getting a good quarterback and you're spending good quarterback money. They're just not going to the same person straight away. And, like, that's not really any skin off of my nose. It's just, you know, not my money is what I like to say. But, yes, I take all your points very well.
And Scott brought to our attention something which, you know, just happened today where Tyrod was getting put through the ringer a little bit, not surprisingly, by the media. and essentially just walked away at the toward the end and just said, I'm done talking, which is very un-Tyrod, like, who I think between him and EJ Manuel have probably been the two most professional quarterbacks the Bills have had in their conduct with, you know, fans, the media, so forth. It was interesting to see that sign of frustration from him that I've only really seen once before, and that was on the field against Seattle after the last play when he just slammed his helmet to the turf. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, he says it's not letting it affect him, but it affects him, and he knows that he's got something to prove. I'm sure we'll talk about Tyrod more in the coming weeks, months, off season. The other aspect, which we'll quickly address, the defense, just kind of starting with that, I think this is concerning to me because the Bills do not have talentless personnel. They've gotten the most you could possibly expect and more out of Lorenzo Alexander and Zach Brown. Shaq Lawson has been a nice enough surprise. He'll be getting his first start. Adolphus Washington seems to be doing okay. Stephon Gilmore certainly had an up and down year, but the last three games he has been money, so that will help him get the money he's been asking for, I'm sure, at the end of the year. We'll have Ronald Darby back. All that said, this defense is not functioning anywhere near the Schwartz level of defense that it was two seasons ago. This is greatly concerning to me as a fan because how much, yes, the secondary is a mess, as Scott pointed out, but there's some in there. But the problem is it's going to get messier. They're going to lose Gilmore, who, despite our criticism of him, is probably better than the options you're going to get out there right now. And I don't necessarily see the defense having bad personnel yet. They've been bad in Rex's system as a whole unit. They've been 17th, 18th in the league in most metrics right now. So we'll start with Star-Lord on this one. You know, my take on defense is the Rex Ryan system is just not working very well anymore, and that this could, you know, really affect the team's fortunes in the future. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I am increasingly, I mean, as much as like I am, like, I was a big Tyrod guy, and I am very disappointed at how he's developed, and I'm concerned that he isn't the guy, which is kind of a change than where I was earlier in the season. But the defense to me is just as, if not more, at fault for how this scheme has kind of fell apart. Like, because frankly, there's a lot more money invested on the defensive side of the team. You know, this year we got Marcell Dareus, $14.6 million, Stephon Gilmore, 11.1, Jerry Hughes, 7.6, Kyle Williams, 6.3, Aaron Williams, 6.1. Obviously, he's hurt. You know, those guys cost a lot of money. In addition to the first three draft picks in the draft, all those guys, they got to be performing at a better level. So I really can't. It's frustrating to me to see them not perform. Again, like, the coaches are supposed to find ways to put the players in a way to have success. Obviously, Jim Schwartz was able to do it 2 years ago. Seems like Rex Ryan can't. So I don't, at this point, I don't know how much more I can be frustrated with Rex, and I don't know what we're going to do about him, frankly. There, I'm done.
Yeah, I got the exact same issues. This is supposed to be what he does, and he doesn't seem to be doing it. And I have a hard time believing it's all talent. And I know that there's been some injuries on the defensive side of the football and some non-injurious issues that have cost players playing time, but it doesn't look anything like, it looks like people have regressed. The cornerbacks don't seem to know what they're doing. The safeties seem to be unable to help. You know, I don't really know that you're getting some sort of great pass rush. There's something bad going on, and it might be if you get rid of Rex Ryan at the end of the year, I won't really be sad. I think that they did the right – I think you got to give him credit for some things, though. I think he did the right thing by making Anthony Lynn the offensive coordinator. I think that, you know, that might be all you have to give him credit for. But, you know, I think that they do some things right, and I think that they come up with really good game plans for some things, and then there are just issues where there's, like, miscommunication. And it's hard for me to decide if that's – we're getting the wrong players, aka Doug Whaley's problem, or Rex Ryan's problem. But, you know, 2 years in and we're fully pregnant now, or whatever the hell he said. I don't know, man. It doesn't look good.
Yep. And that's, you know, I think we all have that same concern, so we won't harp on it too much, but and we'll transition into the running game now, kind of this in this discussion. But, you know, the thought is if the Bills were just an above average defense, not just an elite defense, right now we're not looking at a 6-6 team. We're looking, you know, 8-4 team potentially, or even better. But their inability as much as we harped on Tyrod for his failings this past week, defense gave up 29 points in a five possession span over the course of 12 minutes. That's a problem, and that should never happen.
Yeah,
when you're thinking you're this great a defense. So, and
that's a deal breaker, ladies.
Yeah, deal breaker. The other thing that Rex did talk about that when he became head coach was going to come to fruition. He said he was going to build a bully, but he mentioned specifically the running game and how that was going to take over. The Bills, can't fault Rex on this one. True to his word, they've built what, by a couple of metrics I've seen, is roughly the seventh ranked offensive line in the league. So kudos to them. Specifically when it comes to run blocking, they're ranked even higher. But when you look at, my God, guys, LeSean McCoy, I watched his highlight reel from this game, and I'd forgotten just the number of things he did. It was a 3-minute and 20-second highlight reel in a game where he did not even score a touchdown. The one-handed catch, the moves he makes completely reverse his field, his ability to take like the smallest toll and just go through it. I have not seen this dynamic a player in Buffalo in, God, are we going to have to go back to Thurman Thomas? I mean, Bruce Smith, you know, those are the guys I look at who I just watch every play and be like, you are an athlete that's just a freak, you know, and I can't imagine this. And I think as Buffalo fans, this is one of those where like, just admire that guy every week and look at what he's able to do on the field, because we are not going to see this, I don't think, for a long time again. I really hope, and I tweeted this, that the Bills aren't wasting, you know, him toward the end of the prime of his career with mediocre teams. I don't know, Frank, what your impressions of LeSean have been this season or since he's become a Bill.
Yeah, I think that I think Marshawn Lynch had a game or two like that. And I think you can point to, like, every once in a while you could point to like a player who had a game or two that was really impressive.
McGahee against the Jets.
Right. Yep. McGahee against the Jets, or
the infamous Mumra game.
The Mumra game, right? Like, I think Stevie Johnson had like when he tore up Darrell Revis that one time. That was great. That was awesome. LeSean McCoy does it kind of every week that he's healthy, and when he's not healthy, he still kind of does something. And I think you're right. I think we're talking maybe not Thurman Thomas, like maybe Doug Flutie, you know, maybe like Eric Molds, maybe Eric Molds. You know, it's kind of like a Thurman Thomas level passing and running. It feeds into my point about why I don't just want to piss away, you know, what we have right now. Cause I think it's close. I think if the order of these games were different in the season, like there's a chance that like we'd be in a better position right now. I think sometimes just how the schedule, like it really still feels like sometimes like the schedule breaks a little differently for them and they're sitting a little prettier. Not to make excuses for them, but I feel like he is a great back, and he's probably got one or two more years like this, and maybe not even like this, but close to this. And I don't want to piss that away because it's been really fun to watch him, and he's been a really fun football player, and he's sort of like gone from, you know, being incredibly skeptical and hurt from being traded from the Eagles to kind of embracing the team. And I know that some people have laughed about the trade, about how easily, you know, the Bills were like willing to trade Kiko Alonso, but I do this 10 times out of 10, 100 times out of 100. LeSean McCoy is a special player that is a joy to watch. If nothing else, he's been fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I don't think I agree with much there, so I won't add too much more other than to say, yeah, I mean, he's a you know, a reason to tune in, you know, on some level. You know, he's the guy who you want to, you know, anytime he gets the ball, he's fun to watch. And, like, again, we can't root for the team to win. Like, that's clearly not an option or a sane thing to do at this point, or to make the playoffs, or to be good citizens. I think, you know, all those reasons are gone. So I think pretty much the only reason to still watch is this entertaining? Can I see something special happen? And with LeSean, there's a good chance of that happening at least once a game, you know, if not once a quarter, frankly. So I just enjoy watching him. Yeah.
Has he broken back-to-back like 80 yard runs, like Rick. Like, that's great. Like, that's so much fun to see.
And neither of those were ones where it's like you can drive a truck through it. They were ones where the offensive line did a good job with initial contact so that he was not having people on him until 2 or 3 yards from the line of scrimmage. But then he had guys right on him and then gone. You know, just through the through the holes on that, excuse me. So, yeah, I just wanted to give a little shout out to LeSean there. We'll bump back Shaq Lawson to the Steelers preview part of the game. Looking at Facebook and Twitter questions, Scott very wisely decided not to put it out to you guys on Facebook.
Yes, like, that was a good choice by me. Yes, yeah.
Screw you guys. Like, we're going to probably run long. We'd have to address all these Facebook questions, so let's not do it. So
they were all going to ask, what do we think of Taylor? What are the playoffs? Like, you know, like, we're all thinking the same thing this week.
Yes. And
I feel bad. I should have. It's not a choice. Let's be clear. None of us are getting paid to do this. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in my life. It occurred to me that I should post something, and then I didn't, and then it never happened. That's what happened with the Facebook post this week. It's going to happen again. Everyone can get over it.
Right. It's so funny, and this is a segue to the podcast. There was a time when we started this. We're now in season 5 and season 1, where this was our excuse to meet every week, drink a beer, and have some pizza at one of our apartments in our childless lives, in our non-homeowning selves, and not super stressful jobs. And now it's just like, crap. We try to schedule it, and this is behind the scenes for you guys, but it's like, second the game's on Sunday, like, are we doing this tonight? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, oh, move it this day, move it this day. Like, just getting on the same page. So that's our excuse.
Baby's
for you
going
guys
to sleep here. There's a dog barking. Yep. There's pizza being burned. Anyway,
right. Yeah. So
the fact this podcast shows up every week,
right?
That is, we are the Buffalo Bills of the podcast world.
Right.
We show up every week and we play.
Except we're consistently a top 10 Bills podcast. That's the only difference between us and the Bills. So the Twitter, as I like to call it, great observation by our colleagues at Bills and Beers in a preview of their podcast. They said on Sunday, a guy at the bar puked all over the place. That should have been our cue to leave. I think that's generally how we were all feeling during the game.
Power to those guys for still watching the game at a bar.
Yes, we are. That was our go-to. Now I haven't been to a bar to watch a Bills game since. Oh, no, we did it earlier this year. Never mind.
We did, but like, I did it because you guys were here, and that's why.
Yep. Congratulations on Twitter. Remember Joik Bell, Joel Cabe, I can never pronounce his name. He was a Bill very briefly, but had a good career at the Lions.
Yeah.
He had his master's degree on Saturday, and then he's going to play for the Lions on Sunday. Yeah. So good for him.
Sign in on Twitter, or did he just...
I just noticed this in a retweet, actually.
DM you or anything?
But I'll congratulate him because we talk about players and, you know, how they don't necessarily set themselves up well for a life after football. And he's clearly ready for the life after. It's one of those things people don't give enough credit to Marshawn Lynch to. You could talk about him. He could do different things with his time, surely. Not that it's any of our business, but at least he saved all his money from his initial contract. So he's not going to be going through bankruptcy, one would think.
Apparently Gronk does the same thing.
Yep.
Did not know that. But
it's the way to go. I think Marshawn's strategy was he took his signing bonus money as the money he was going to live on for the rest of his NFL career, and all his contract money he was deferring for retirement. Tom noted, you know, there's a chance for the Bills if they run the board and Denver loses twice, Pats and Oakland to play, Dolphins lose one more. That's all possible, Tom. I think it's just my thing. The one we all agree is like they're expecting too much, and we're also expecting the Bills running the board. And I think legitimately that's just not going to happen. We'll see. He said, we'll have to root for the Pats a lot the next 4 weeks, and I'd rather wait it out till next year. You know, we might agree. It's tough to root for the Pats a lot.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
He said there wasn't much shame in the loss. The Bills were steamrolled by an unstoppable offense. Poor losses were earlier in the season, which goes to what Frank says. I would say yes, to a degree, they were steamrolled by an unstoppable offense, but the Bills offense had a chance to reply, and they did get steamrolled. But even if they'd given up, instead of 29 points, 22 points, that would have changed the perspective of the game, giving the Bills a chance to reply at the end.
That's the thing, yeah. It's not like we got blown off the field from the first quarter by a more talented team. Like, these are two NFL teams. They are all getting paid, and the Bills still scored 4 points in this game on the road. That should be good enough, frankly, even with the offense going into a death spiral.
Spiral is a good term.
Well, either one, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's an accurate term. I don't know if I like it.
Oh, no, yeah. They're both true. Brian Punn and Orlando both point out this money stat. The Raiders had been 0-72 when down 15 or more since 2001. They are now 1-72. So good job. Good job, Raiders.
Yes.
Orlando's ready.
Bill's making history again.
Orlando ready to get rid of Tyrod and Rex. We have this discussion, but definitely Rex, he notes. I wouldn't mind, but I think because he's under contract, he gets another year. Marshawn Lynch epically was thrilled he got drafted by Buffalo until he realized it wasn't the New York he thought he was. That has nothing to do with the game. I thought that was funny observation, which I remember happening. Thurman had the same thing when he came to Buffalo. I was like, where are all the big buildings here in New York?
Yeah. Marshawn.
So those are some of the Twitter observations. Thanks to everyone who communicated with me. There was a lot of you guys. Maybe it's because it's a 4 o'clock game. There was more drinking, but it was good to be in touch with so many of you this past week. Onward we move to a not special edition, but an edition nonetheless of this day in Bill's history. And let me tell you, what a craptastic realm of games to choose from for today. I initially had them all open on their Wikipedia pages just so I could mention them, but then I closed them because it depressed me. There was like a 20-3 loss to the Bears. There's like one win over the Jets in 02 that I don't, or 03 maybe, that I don't even remember happening or a single detail about the game. So I went to a time before most of our fandom and before Scott's life to December 7th of 1980. So the Bills had been a perennial loser. And then 1978 decided to hire Chuck Knox away from the Los Angeles Rams. So Knox had spent 2 years rebuilding Buffalo. He drafted Joe Cribbs and Fred Smirlis, Jim Haslett, Jerry Butler, and brought some Rams players with him, saying by 1980 the Bills were going to be winners. So what does it come down to? A game against the Rams. So the Bills went into a game 9-4 visiting with the Rams visiting them at then Rich Stadium. You can find the weather reports for this game and online, but I won't go into the weather. The Bills had blown a good opportunity the prior week. The Bills had blown an opportunity the prior week to really just close it out, but blew a 14-point lead against the Baltimore Colts and lost 28-24. So it was there was only one touchdown for the Bills. Strong safety Steve Freeman intercepted a Vince Ferragamo pass. Vince would later go on to play for the Bills in 1985, where he threw 5 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. The Bills wisely got rid of him. And then Green Bay's like, why would you get rid of a guy who throws 5 touchdowns and 17 interceptions? So they pick him up, and he throws 3 interceptions with no touchdowns. Like, oh, that's why. And then they cut him. That was kind of Vince Ferragamo's career. Vince Ferragamo...
There was a big gap between Bart Starr and Brett Favre.
Yeah, so there was. And then they got Aaron Rodgers right after that. So they lucked out. The combined passing totals of this game for the Rams, 34 yards passing. The Bills were not much better, though, with Joe Ferguson. They ended up tied at the end of regulation. So it was 7-7. The Bills lost the coin toss in overtime, but the defense dominated the Rams. Joe Ferguson came out, moved the Bills into field goal range, and Mike Mayer drilled a 30-yard field goal. The Bills got their 10th victory of the season. They ended up going on 11-5 and won an AFC championship after a decade-long drought. It was a big season for them. The Rams were a good team, too. They finished 11-5. They knocked off the Cowboys next week, who then went on to beat them in the playoffs and win the Super Bowl that year. And it was after the game, there was a crowd of 77,000. They did not leave the stadium. It got so caught up in the excitement that Fred Smirlis actually led a bunch of players back out onto the field to celebrate and dance with the fans. So I think we can expect that sort of activity on Sunday when the Bills play the Steelers as well. So we'll find that out. But that was December 7th, 1980, 36 years ago. The Bills go to 10-4, would finish season 11-5, and win the AFC title. Now, the trivia question. I chose another game that happened on December 7th, thinking it would be the game I would describe. There was just too much nondescript about that game. So the game I was going to describe was a 21-17 loss to the Browns in 1986, which caused the Bills to fall 4-10 and the Browns to go to 10-4. Jim Kelly did throw for 315 yards, only his second career 300-yard passing game during his rookie season. But the trivia question I thought was still more engaging if I had it come from this game. So the trivia question is this. There were a lot of exceptional players in this Bills-Browns game on December 7th of 86. Hall of Famer Jim Kelly, Hall of Famer Andre Reed, one of the best tight ends you will ever see in the game, and Ozzie Newsome, Hall of Famer Bruce Smith, you know, Bernie Kosar, Pro Bowl quarterback, you know, just up and down, defensive players of the year, offensive players of the year. There is only one player who played in the Bills-Browns 1986 game who was ever a National Football League most valuable player. Can you name this player from the December 7th, 1986 contest of the Bills and the Browns? I will start with Frank on this one, and Star-Lord will give us the correct answer after.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is after O.J. Simpson's time.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be somebody old, I feel like.
Well, the game was 30 years ago, so no, you are correct on that.
But I mean, it must be like an MVP that was then like on his like fourth team or something. Like he was well past his prime, and you wouldn't really think that he was on the Browns.
Well, I will tell you this. He was someone who was on his fourth team.
Oh, see, right, so I'm on the right track.
Yes, you are. He was born in 1948, so by the time of this game, he was somewhere around 38-ish years old.
All right.
Are you sure he was born around in 1948? Because I think I remember he was born like sometime around like 2061 BC.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see where Scott can go with his answer.
Yeah, let me make my guess first, because I think you're gonna, you know, kick my butt.
I mean, I'm not sure. We'll see, but
you know, I honestly don't know, so I'm just gonna say Y.A. Tittle, who I know is not playing.
Okay. Frank, that's an amusing attempt at humor.
I don't know what I was thinking.
That was titillating, one might say. Why is he still alive, by the way, age 90 right now?
I feel bad that I kind of made light of our, you know, Scott takes this game so seriously, and I shouldn't have made light of it.
This isn't a joke. This is very serious stuff. People come to this podcast to learn, and Frank just spits on them with that kind of, you know.
Okay, well, then I will say.
Classless kind of act.
I don't know if he was on. I don't know whether anything. I just know Steve DeBerg would be about that old, so I'll say Steve.
Okay,
DeBerg.
All right. That's a legitimate. That's an NFL football player who played in the league in the 80s, roughly.
Yes.
That's fine. Anyway, the correct answer, Mentuhotep II.
Ah!
Mentuhotep II. Yes. Well, so he was after Ramses, I think, and then before that was Jack Kemp. Or I don't know. I'm not 100%. But
yeah.
Anyway, this is but it is pretty sure it's Mentuhotep II, because he was 11th dynasty, and then he was kind of like, people get confused because it's like he reunited Egypt, ending the first intermediary period, but because he then became the pharaoh, then he was really the first ruler for the Middle Kingdom set of dynasties. So it people get confused, and then, you know, and then he ended up being named MVP a couple years later,
right?
I think probably. I mean, it's tough to tell because he had a lot of, you know, the mummy bandages on him when they gave him the award, but that was him in those bandages at the time.
And also, then
he stole the soul from that one guy too, which was odd. See, again, I don't think that flies in today's NFL. I feel like Goodell probably.
That's a personal fault. That at least gets you the warning that if you steal a second person's soul, that's a disqualification.
Yeah, unless the whistle's blown and Richard Sherman just runs over and steals your soul, then it's like, oh, there was no penalty.
Exactly. Right. Though somehow that's not a necessary soul stealing. Right. And then the other idea where, like, this is more of a fine than domestic violence, but not as much as not wearing your NFL Under Armour cleats on Sundays. Like, seems like there's needs to be some redistricting of the punishments and the chain of command here. That's feet, because Mentuhotep, I mean, again, a great player, but dirty towards the end there, you know.
Yep. Funny indie movie, Bubba Hotep.
Oh, I was thinking about Bubba Hotep too. Yep. So what's interesting here is Scott's guess, even though he was born 4,000 years essentially before the inception of the NFL and was long dead before it began and probably did not have any concept of what football was, would probably have been a more deserving MVP than 1982 most valuable player Mark Moseley, the only kicker in history to win a Most Valuable Player award.
I think so. Yeah.
There's a great article on Grantland about this titled "The Year
Agreed,
the
NFL." I'm gonna agree to disagree on this, I guess.
the year the NFL went insane and gave a kicker the MVP award. I encourage you to read that and go all about how, for some reason, a bunch of voters thought it was good to give a kicker the Most Valuable Player award. He was fine. I mean, he made 20 of 21 field goals. Great. He made 16 of 19 extra points. Not so great. His longest field goal, 48 yards. MVP performance, according to the voters. He played for Philly his first season, Houston the next two, most of his career with Washington, with whom he won the MVP, and then finished his last four games of his career with Cleveland, including this one against Buffalo. So yeah, it was Mark Moseley who played in this game on December 7th of 86. Y. Tittle, by the way, four MVP awards. So Frank was also not bad with his guess. Just unfortunately, Y. Tittle did retire in 1964.
So yeah, right. I knew I was way off. Yeah. Right.
So onward to the present day and the Pittsburgh Steelers. That is who the Bills will play this weekend. Hopefully they will be partying like it's 1999, not only the last time the Bills made the playoffs, which would make this so appropriate if, in fact, the Bills had won last week and this game would have legitimate playoff concerns. That was the last time the Bills beat the Steelers. That is the only team the Bills have not beaten this millennium, I believe. I think the Atlanta Falcons may be another, but they're certainly the only AFC team the Bills have not beaten this millennium. So, for thoughts on the game, I guess we will start with you, Star-Lord.
Steelers, I can't believe this is right. Are they only a point and a half favorite over the Bills?
Yeah.
I guess they're not that. I mean, they are certainly they're 7-5. So by records alone, and obviously going on the road at Buffalo, clearly if it was in Pittsburgh, obviously they'd be much larger favorites, but that would seem insane to me. Like, I don't think that anyone who values their gambling money would bet on here at getting a point and a half. Like, that would seem to be not nearly enough to make me want to bet on them. Obviously the Steelers, they've got problems on defense. Roethlisberger has been kind of, that's the thing, like Roethlisberger's been hurt for a couple games. Brown's been in and out, I think. So the idea that they're gonna come to Buffalo and lose to me seems a little silly. Especially again, like Antonio Brown, again, like, obviously the Amari Cooper didn't end up lighting us up last week, but I don't think that was necessarily like that big of a deal because clearly the rest of the team did. I have no confidence that the Bills are gonna win this game. And they could just continue last week's kind of shattering of all Bills fans' hopes, and really, I mean, we're right on schedule, I think. I mean, yeah, I could see them dragging it out another week or two and getting us to week 17, but I feel like this season could just go in the tank right now. So yeah, let's go ahead and put it in the books. I'm gonna call it Steelers 28, Bills 20.
All right, Steelers 28, Bills 20. Frank, what do you got?
I don't want to do this, but I'm with Scott. Like, who are the Steelers? The Steelers are a professional football team with a quarterback and a dangerous wide receiver, and they will probably beat the Bills. Like, they're about as good as the Bills, and the Bills can't beat teams that are about as good as them or better. So, what real faith do I have? They're at home? That doesn't really mean anything. It depends, could they win this game? Yeah, like, I don't think the Steelers are great. I'm not going to pick them. I want them to win. I'll say this. I want them to win because then it makes the rest of the season, it's not like they beat Miami or the Jets or Cleveland and nobody was really trying, right? And it didn't really, it wasn't for anything. At least if you beat the Steelers, you can say, well, we're, still trying here. Like, it's still an important thing to the season. So I would like for them to win. But I think 26-20 is probably right. It's pretty close to Scott's score.
All right, easy to remember. Now, this is a tough game for me to pick because, in one sense, the Bills are on track for where they normally are. There's still the mathematical hope phase, but really kind of a long shot. They've lost the Steelers every time they've played them since 1999. You know, they will have had difficulty stopping competent offenses. The Steelers are a much better than competent offense. So this seems like the kind of game the Bills are going to lose. The reason I'm hedging is because I still don't think the Bills have given quite a large enough dosage of false hope yet this year. I feel like a little more needs to be injected into this season before it's a true Bills, season. So I am going to actually pick the Bills in this one. Think they have a chance. I think there's a reason they're a 1.5 underdog or 2-point underdog only. Because the Steelers' defense is questionable and the Bills have a great rushing offense. And if they can control the ball and keep the Pittsburgh offense off field, that bodes well. So I will say, you know what? Scott picks 28-20. Frank picks 26-20. I'm going to say 27-20 Buffalo. Hmm. So okay. We're going to go with that route. So, I think that's pretty much it. I guess we'll do the whole run through. You should follow us on Facebook, B-Bills MNY. I have totally lost our Facebook page. Facebook.com/B-Bills MNY. There we go. Twitter.com, B-Bills MNY.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's all right. They know how to operate the internets. So we'll
go to our website, bbillsmny.buffalo bills and beers /.it.
You can
BuffaloRumblings.com, our website.
Yeah. Oh man, you can follow us on Twitter as well. I will interact with you occasionally during the week, and of course on game day itself as well. You can Google Buffalo Bills podcast. We are number 6, right? No, excuse me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In fact, we are on the first page twice. We are number 5 and 6 right now. So kudos to us. I thank you for listening. Thank you, Porn Bots, as always, for your contributions to making sure that we're well followed. And we've got to remember. Scott just reminded me of something else that we'll talk about later. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I hope Shaq Lawson doesn't get injured in his first game starting.
Oh yeah, forgot that. Shaq Lawson, congrats on your first NFL start. We're going to talk about that more. We'll move that to next week and see how did Shaq perform in his first NFL start. So we'll go that way since I unintentionally dropped that on the agenda. Congrats, Shaq, on earning that honor. You've played well.
My thought is that if the Bills do lose this game, then the final weeks of the season will be filled with the absolute worst. Like, I will expect the Bills fans to make Deadspin more than once. If we are playing meaningless games in December, I expect to be in Deadspin no less than twice.
Yep.
Well, we're going to need to come up. If we lose this Sunday, we should come back next week with like a bingo game of like fan celebration /acts that could happen in the parking lot that will, get on Deadspin. Mm-hmm. It'll be like a Mad Libs of like, verb snorted, kicked,
yeah, we're not
time frame, after the game.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll work it all out. It'll be good. Yeah.
It'll be amazing.
Tune in for that next week.
Yep.
Yes. Until then, I'm Paul.
I'm Scott. Frank.
Yeah, that's appropriate.